Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It's time for the next in our series of concerns pods. This one about the offensive line depth, one that I know a lot of people share. Joining me to talk about this is David McGill. David, first time on the show, right?
First time on the show, Ken. Big fan of the show. This is a little bit surreal for me to be on here. So thanks so much for having me tonight.
I appreciate you coming on, and from the materials and points you sent me beforehand, I know we're going to have a good conversation here. And David, you're a big Reddit user, and I would love for more of the Reddit community to join me. The r/Ravens, a great community, and we'll get your info out there at the end, make sure that people know where to contact you and talk football. But I think let's start off by just saying we're going to talk about offensive line depth because I think that's significant, but we need to probably also talk about the concerns that people have about the starter quality that the Ravens have across the board. Where are you on the five apparent starters for the Ravens?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there were any huge surprises specifically with the starters, but I am a little nervous. I mean, look, in the offseason, there was, you know, great news with us re-signing and extending Stanley, but there's been some changes. I mean, we lost McCary, and Voorhees seems to be the guy, right, that's going to be filling in for him. And Voorhees last year, I mean, he got injured like five games in, or maybe not even that long in, and didn't play much the rest of the season, almost lost the job to McCary. And as much as, you know, there's a lot of hype and excitement with him, I think that we don't really know yet what maybe he's truly capable of. And obviously we hope he can fill McCary's shoes, but a little bit of nerves there with him. And then I think with some of the others too, obviously Falele was a huge topic of conversation last year. And I think he improved a lot as the year went on, but there's still some concerns with him and what he can and can't do. And, you know, Rosengarten as well, he held his own at other points, but at certain points he had a lot of help chip blocking and whatnot. And we have a very tough start to the schedule this year, up until the bye week. So a little bit nervous with some of the teams we're going to be facing with those guys.
Certainly a trial by fire for some of these guys. Now, it would be unfair in either Falele's case or Rosengarten's case to say they haven't had their trial by fire. It'd be ridiculous in the case of Stanley or Linderbaum because they've been playing for multiple years and have, you know, significant postseason awards under their belt. But I guess if I were to pick out one thing you hadn't said so far, I would be concerned about a potential decline from Ronnie Stanley. He looked like he was better physically this last year than he'd been before. I still am concerned every year with him about injuries, even though he takes his body very seriously. You really notice this in terms of how he recovers from practice. I think he does he's obviously working very hard to make sure he maintains his health. But I look at the position and the depth, particularly at that tackle spot, is paper thin.
Right.
You know, the next guy is Note Boom, who's not very good. And the guy after him is Carson Vinson, who is a developmental player.
Right. Right. Yeah. I know Note Boom would be the obvious replacement if something were to happen to Stanley. And although I'm glad the Ravens picked him up, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ken, but I know I believe his run blocking is a lot better than his pass blocking. I think wasn't he one of the worst graded pass blockers in the league last year or something like that?
Note Boom? Actually, I'm not sure. Are you talking about like a PFF grade or something?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe I saw that. And well, you'll have to fact check me on that. But yeah, I don't know if anybody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see that happen. So that is concern as far as it goes with depth and him backing up Stanley, who's our guy. You know, that's our star on the offensive line. And like you said, he's last year was his first year where he was able to really play healthy. And we hope he can hold that up.
I mean, Noteboom, the issue I've had is that he's never really been particularly good or really played any snaps in his career. So the most snaps he ever had in a season, I looked at this recently, and it's a surprisingly low total. Yeah, the most snaps he's ever had in a season is 633. So he's never really been a full-time player. It's always been a case of he's taking over for somebody.
Gotcha.
He's got in 7 seasons, he's got 2,380 snaps. So that's 350 a year roughly.
Mm-hmm.
That he's had. So it's just, there's not a lot on his record. And yeah, it looks like last year, at least PFF didn't not grade him particularly higher the last, well, really 2 years as a pass blocker. Honestly, he's not been that great as a run blocker either. He's a guy who I would point to as he's a replacement level backup tackle. And that is the reason that I've been concerned about him. I think he's just honestly a placeholder until mm-hmm. Vincent is ready. I don't think that's going to happen in 2025. I would love to be shocked by that, by the way, but I'm not convinced that's going to happen. I think he'll probably be, for some reasons we'll get into a little bit later, I think he'll probably be inactive pretty much every game. There may be an exception if somebody gets hurt. Certainly could be an exception, but we need to talk about two things in here before we get too much further. The first is that the Ravens rostered 9 offensive linemen, which mm-hmm. was a little surprising to me. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think a lot of the surprise too obviously has to do with them choosing to run with Ali as the fourth running back, and that, you know, made it so that they had to, I guess they really couldn't carry Dellinger on the roster, correct, because mm-hmm. of that.
Yeah.
And we lost him, and you know, we spent draft capital on him this year in the draft, and I know that he was a 7th-round pick, and I don't think he flashed or anything amazing in preseason, right? But he was a developmental prospect, correct? I mean,
yeah, the last 2 games I had him at right around a C in terms of his overall grading over those 2 games, and I think that honestly is, it would be great if that happened during the regular season. He's up against regular players. He was playing a little bit later in these games. And there were some surprising things that happened, which I'm not sure if it was part of why he moved on. Mm-hmm. But playing behind Dalcourt, I'm mm-hmm. not sure if that was head games or whatever. But they wanted to sign Dellinger, and they did not, by their actions, sign Dalcourt, which was very strange to me. Very strange.
Yeah.
That they went with Penning, who had not played well in the preseason, and Samak, who I have a lot less confidence in overall than Dellinger or Dalcourt.
Absolutely. Why do you think, because that was strange to me too. I mean, and again, we're not talking about, these are backup guys, but why do you think that they did that specifically with letting Dalcourt go there?
I don't know. He was on the practice squad last year. He played well in last year's preseason, is my recollection. And he was a versatile guard center player, and mm-hmm. and the Ravens need that, and they need a couple guys on the team who could possibly be centers in 2026.
Right,
they don't want to be forced into a draft pick obligation near the top to get the center that they think can do it for them next year.
Yeah, and as far as centers go, too, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't the backup for Lindy this year also be Bullock?
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. He's without question, he's the guy. And I think he'd be the starter next year if the Ravens didn't draft somebody, or if Linderbaum gets hurt, Bullock plays time, plays some this year. I think he could solidify or incumbentify his 2026 role with some solid play. And that's just all assuming, of course, they're not able to come to terms with Linderbaum, which I still hope they can, but it just seems like every passing week is going to make it less likely mm-hmm. as the season rolls on.
I think so. And I mean, didn't DaCosta allude to this a few days ago when he announced the Hamilton extension? But it's, you know, it's the situation we're in, and it's a good problem to have when you have a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. You have to allocate a lot of the cap too. But part of me thinks it's going to come down to either him or Travis Jones, and maybe they'll find a way to keep both. I don't know, but to me, I would think it's one or the other. And I could be wrong, but I know you've talked about too how with Linderbaum in particular, you'd have to be paying him, offensive line money for a center, and maybe that doesn't make the most sense. Who knows? It's a complicated situation, right?
Yeah, it is complicated. I would say he should not set the market a year after Creed Humphrey. I think that, mm-hmm. I would think he'd be making 10% less than Creed Humphrey. Mm-hmm. But if he were to make the same amount, maybe I could live with it. I think it is really a stretch price to pay for Linderbaum, mm-hmm. but maybe I could live with it. If he were to be the first $20 million center, I'd be really upset. I'd just be really upset yeah. over it. Yeah. And it's all unlike the Hamilton money, which doesn't start till after 26. Right. Linderbaum money would start in 26. So in a lot yeah. of ways, it's quite a bit worse.
Yeah. So you'd almost need to get that Lamar extension done. I mean, that's almost the most important thing to figure out, I guess, before you can really make some of these decisions. But yeah.
I think, Eric certainly understands that. I think that Lamar probably understands it, and he may even be trying to use it. So we'll see how that plays out. But, Lamar hopefully has a vested interest in keeping this team together and doing that. And he's got, I'm sure, and I don't know the total, but I'm guessing Lamar makes a lot of money in endorsements as well, and TV yeah. money and whatnot. So, I mean, he's got a vested interest, obviously, in maintaining his stardom, which is in large part a function of the people around him. Tom Brady really understood that.
Yes.
And I hope that Lamar gets it. Lamar obviously does not have the kind of endorsement profile that Mahomes or Brady has, no, but still.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. No, I was thinking of Tom Brady when you were saying that too, because they always talk about, him understanding that. But yeah, I do hope Lamar understands it. And I'm sure to some extent he does. But it's the current world we live in with QBs and the kind of money they're commanding. So. Mm-hmm.
We talked about 9 offensive linemen being rostered. The other big X factor on this is Emory Jones and whether or not he'll be back at some point during 2025. I take a lot of heat wherever I say things about these kind of things, and that's fine. I'm here to generate discussion, and I as long as it's healthy and not toxic, that's a good thing. But I will say this. I think Emory Jones can't be back before week 5. Let's start with that. So there is can kicking time had they decided to roster 10 offensive linemen to start with. Mm-hmm. They could have started with 10, Dellinger one of them, decided if he could help the team or not, possibly by that period, maybe even due to injury, if not due to more practice. And then they could decide, hey, is Emory Jones really in a position to help this team during the window where he can come back and start practicing with the team again? And, it's probably going to be midseason, I would guess, before he's back. And every week that we go a step further is a week less that the Ravens get in terms of 2025 value. Honestly, it's a week less of ramp time, as we saw with David Ajabo, is really significant in terms of really getting him ready to play, whether it's in the weight room or, presumably he's been in the meeting rooms and doing that stuff, but the weight room and the rehab on a shoulder injury for an offensive lineman, it just seems like that's a long journey back. And I the Ravens at some point are going to say, hey, we need to come some sort of arrangement and redshirt you for this season, because right now you can't help us enough for it to be worth it for us for you to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was very excited about, him as a draft prospect. I was watching the LSU Clemson game last night, and they were talking about him, actually. And it sounds like the Ravens, knew, I guess, going into this drafting him, that he was going to have a surgery, and they weren't concerned about it or anything. And it makes sense that, it didn't affect their decision making. But yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, could this at all spell just kind of some of the decisions they made with the roster and the practice squad? Could this at all spell that maybe we're within, like you said, each passing week it becomes less likely? But
yeah. So you're saying on the other side, is there some portent here that,
yes,
that he'll be back sooner based on the fact that Dellinger does not see, say, the opportunity, because he was a practice squad to practice squad sign. He wasn't claimed. And that's a key thing most people miss. So Dellinger effectively was asked to be on the Ravens practice squad, said, I'm going to look into my other options, and then signed with Cleveland.
Yes. Yes. And no, you bring up a good point too, because I myself have made that mistake where Dellinger chose to go be on the Browns practice squad. And I'm assuming that's because I would think he found it maybe a better shot of getting, you know, getting to where he wants to be there, or maybe he was really mad he got cut. I don't know, but
yeah, I think he could have been mad at getting cut because, you know, you'd want to be kept as a 10th offensive lineman in this sort of a situation. But I'm not sure he's going to get that at Cleveland either. And then it may be just a matter of, okay, if I'm not going to be kept as a 10th offensive lineman, then I got to look at team A, team B, who am I going to get quicker? And one of the considerations might have been Emory Jones' return. Right. So he sees Emory Jones in the meeting rooms, presumably, and he probably has like an idea in the weight room.
Yeah,
probably has an idea of how close he is.
Right. You would think so, and that could be it. But who knows? It's, you know, obviously pure speculation at this point. Yeah. But
yeah. All right, let's talk through the roster a little bit because we've kind of gone over a lot of this, but we haven't gone ahead on quite everybody yet. And they've got four offensive tackles on the team, and this is unusual, but they're four pure offensive tackles with Stanley, Rosengarten, Noteboom, and Vincent. So that's four of their nine rostered offensive linemen are pure offensive tackles. And by the way, I think Jones would be a tackle slash guard. I don't expect him to be just a guard, although that may be where he ends up in his NFL career. But ideally, he's a guy who can play both positions at least early on and help you back up what you have. Make it easier to say goodbye to Noteboom next year, frankly, is one of the big things. Mm-hmm. But with having four pure offensive tackles, it really puts you in a bind on game day because you have eight active offensive linemen, and typically you want to have three things be true. You want to have three to make two at tackles. So you want to activate three tackles so two of them can play. You want to have four interior offensive linemen who are pure interior offensive linemen who cover the first four instances on the inside. That gives you seven. Then you need one guy who can swing, who can be a guard or tackle. And he just has to do it probably in an emergency. And I guess the guy they're thinking of in this year could be that is Cleveland, but it does create some problems to have four offensive tackles on the roster that you really only ever want to have three of those active. So if you have a nine to make eight on game day roster, then you're not leaving yourself any room at all. You're basically saying Vincent's going to be out every week, or maybe Noteboom is at some point, but Vincent, a tackle.
It's got to be Vincent.
Yeah. And then all your eight other guys have to be healthy. There has to be nobody dinged up, or you have to start dipping into the practice squad and bring up a Nick Samak or a Penning to fill in for games.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the last thing that anybody wants. That's, if you want to talk about concerns, that's a huge concern right there, is that situation. But I mean, yeah, if they all stay healthy, it's fine. You know, we don't not any problems, but. So are you saying though that, so is Cleveland would be the fill in for Stanley then if something were to happen?
No, I think all roads lead to Noteboom would take over on a 1-for-1 replacement for Stanley.
Gotcha.
That if any other injury involves a change at right tackle, or potentially if Noteboom is the injury, it means that Rosengarten is your backup for Stanley at left tackle.
Gotcha.
So I think those are kind of the possibilities as I would see it. I don't see Vincent ever stepping in at left tackle this year. I don't really see him stepping at right tackle either. But if he were to play a little bit, it'd probably be on the left side, and it'd probably be in a mop-up situation where he had an unusual reason for being activated, like the Ravens didn't have any other choices, or they had one year they had walking wounded for all of their extra guys on the roster. So they had to activate everybody who was even at all healthy on the roster, even with their elevations.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, all right. So anyway, the four offensive tackles, a little bit of a tough position. Then they've got four guards, and guard choices are Falele, Voorhees, Cleveland. And then I'm putting Bullock in this group too, although he's really a guard or center backup. He's a two-way player. Talk about your overall satisfaction of that group. You talked a little bit about Voorhees and not much about Falele earlier, but in terms of
So let's talk about Falele. I think, as I mentioned last year, that's where the drama was with everybody, you know, all the concerns on the offensive line, and a lot of them were valid at first. I mean, I think that people, maybe I personally believe, maybe give him props, is that he really did improve a lot. I think by the last stretch of last year, he was like pretty damn good. If I'm not, I mean, okay, maybe I won't get it, but he was fine. So
no, he's pretty damn good, I would say.
Okay. And I know that I believe it's something you've talked about too, but he's, and correct me if I got, yeah, he's okay in pass blocking. It's run blocking where he struggles. Correct.
Yes, he's, and that's like being good in on base percentage, but bad at slugging. It's the important one to be good at.
Right. And I will say as a side note, I went to the Ravens, stadium practice, a few weeks ago, and I'd always heard everyone talk about how big Falele was. Mm-hmm. And I got up close there. We're about 20 yards from where the, that position group was working at. And my God, he is huge. It is unbelievable. Him and Cleveland both, honestly. So I can see at least for that alone why the Ravens like him. But yeah, I mean, I think everybody's probably got concerns for him. The Ravens are really hyping him up. I know Todd Monken made a point to really talk him up and shoot down some of the criticisms that people had. There was a video circulating, I think it was after the preseason game.
Yeah.
First Indianapolis, where he got, you know, it wasn't a pretty rep for him. But Monken didn't care about that. He said, you know, I love Daniel. He's our guy. And so at a certain point, I mean, I'm rooting for him. I think everyone is and really want, but he's got to take, it can't start off like it did last year. It can't. And that's where my concern is. Yeah.
I completely agree with you. I've got some numbers for you here just real quickly. So for the first 14 games, this is through week 15 against the Giants, which was his last bad game. He had a 0.72 raw score. And at guard, that would be, let me put this in, with a normal amount of adjustment there, he'd be right on the D plus C minus border, but probably a D plus is what I would say, closer to anything else. The last five games of the year, including the two playoffs games, which were two of his best, 0.85, which would be on the B plus A minus border.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
You know, a big jump in terms of play. And I don't think a lot of people recognized it, but he didn't have the last 309 snaps. He had one penetration allowed. That's caused a loss on a run play. Mm-hmm. Two pressures. 0.5 against Pittsburgh, 1.5 against Cleveland. And he had no quarterback hits, no sacks, and no penalties. Very important. There are no mm-hmm. penalties.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
Ended up with, terrific scoring because of that. So, you know, just I don't understand a lot of the hate. And for people who are looking at, you know, to find individual things he did wrong in the playoff games, there's plenty of times where he makes a lousy run block. And you just live with that when you're getting the other things at a high level. So anyway,
totally. And I think anybody, any sane Ravens fan would sign for that. I mean, if we could get that level of play, I remember even in the loss to the Bills, Lamar had all kinds of time, especially in that final painful two minutes, marching us down the field. He was great. I Ravens have high hopes from this year. I do too. But I guess you just worry when you see some of, I guess, what we saw in the preseason. I mean, how did you grade him if he had an average grade through all? Well, I guess, did he even play much after the Indianapolis preseason game?
I don't know that he did, but his total amount of snaps were trivial. So was Voorhees. I think that Voorhees played 31 snaps, my guess is Falele also probably played 31. Probably for the same series. Voorhees was terrific in 31 snaps. Falele, you know, looked terrible on one play, and he also looked bad on another play where he's pulling on a pass play that didn't look good. But other than that, because that's like saying the woman's missing half her face and she still has a great personality and whatnot. It's not like that. This is a case where Falele did not play well this preseason, but I look at it as those are 31 snaps or 12 snaps in the one game where he really played poorly. And the 309 are still the more significant factor. Plus all the other things we've heard about him this offseason, I'm still quite optimistic about how he can do with the individual training he's taken on, mm-hmm. working with Duke Manyweather and doing more to lose weight and get in better shape. He doesn't look any quicker to me on the field. So there are limitations in terms of what you can do with him, but it did not hurt the Ravens last year. They rushed for 5.9 yards per play. So if you tell me Daniel Falele is, the weakest link is going to kill the Ravens, well, where's the evidence?
yeah, You're absolutely right, and it's one of those things that I think it, you know, with online and Twitter and Reddit, where it got circulated a lot, and some of the gripes were valid, especially early on. But he did improve, but that's what we expect out of him this year. So,
okay, so what's your, give me a 0 to 5 confidence level on the four guards, each one. So 5 being the highest confidence ever. 5, Lily, where's your level of confidence personally?
So you said 5 being the highest one, right? Yeah. 3.
Okay, fair enough. And Voorhees?
So Voorhees, yeah, 2 maybe. Okay. I'm worried about him. I just don't know if we really know what we're getting there yet. I mean, would you disagree? Or
no, I wouldn't disagree. I think that's about right. I'd probably say the same for Falele as you did right now. It's a 3, but you know, it's,
we'll take it. Yeah,
it's a first world problem to have a 3 be, sure, your biggest concern, right?
Sure.
Cleveland.
Whew. Maybe I'd also put him at a 2 at this point with Cleveland. I mean, I know he played more in the preseason, right? He looked okay, I guess, but I would rather say 1. I'm going to put 1 for him. I think, yeah.
Okay, I'd probably say about it. My concern is more that they just have no interest in putting him on the field.
That's what I mean too. Yeah.
But I think if he were actually on the field, I think my concern is 2.5.
Okay, right there. Fair enough.
So it's right in the middle. How about Bullock?
Man, he's such a feel-good story with him making the roster this year and whatnot. That's awesome. Oh, fun fact about him too. You probably know this, but he was a defensive end in high school.
Did not know that.
He was a defensive end in high school, and he started playing tackle in college. Just funny. But yeah, I don't. Unless something happens to Lindy, I don't know that I want to see. Let's say 1, right?
Okay, for Bullock, 1. Okay. I'd probably say 2 for Bullock. I don't think we know what we have, but he played well enough in the preseason.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
The holding call was bad, and it's not, I think, reflected well in a PFF grade, but it is what it is. Okay, well, let's move on to the center position, where Linderbaum is the guy and Bullock is the backup now. Any issue with that position? Anything you'd point out there that needs to be better?
You mean with Bullock backing up Linderbaum?
With Linderbaum and Bullock as the backup.
No.
Okay.
No, I think it makes sense.
And I'm fine with it. I do think that Linderbaum, it would really help if he would improve as a pass blocker in terms of getting him the money he wants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a kind of a down year last year, right? And I know some people attributed that. They blamed it on Daniel Falele, and maybe that was part of it. I don't know. But yeah, no, I'm with you.
He's been up and down. I mean, he had a really lousy rookie year as a pass blocker and had a great year as a run blocker. So that led to some strange scoring and then a big jump in terms of his pass blocking the second year, which truly catapulted him into being one of the best centers in the league.
Yep.
And then down again in year 3, which is unfortunate. So he's a player. I'd love the Ravens to sign him now if the price is right. If not, I wouldn't mind if the Ravens pay him at the top of the market if he proves he's a better pass blocker this year.
Sure. I think that's fair. And yeah, this is a big year for him. So.
All right. What else do we want to talk about? We talked about that 9-to-8 flexibility. We talked about Emory Jones already, I think. Losing Garrett Dellinger to the Browns, I guess we've heard about. The Darian Dalcourt situation, just really weird to me.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, he played relatively well in the preseason this year, correct?
I think PFF may have it scored that way. I thought last year he maybe was a little bit better in the preseason. I could look that up, how PFF.
I think he was decent in pass blocking, but yeah, check that for me.
Yeah, I did not score any Dalcourt games. We don't do a full offensive line scoring in the preseason.
Okay.
So, but I know last year he looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Last year he was terrific in the preseason. This year he hasn't made any significant pass blocking errors in either year. If you look at PFF, he hasn't had a great run blocking score either year, and that's just that's the split you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high on base percentage, low slugging,
right
player. Yeah. So. I'm a little bit surprised they didn't stick with him given some of the versatility he shows, and he is you know, one of their early choices at center. He's also been one of their early choices at guard. I'm really surprised. Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird with him. It's weird, weird with Dellinger too. It almost, for some reason, reminds me of, like, you know, now that all this stuff about Cleveland came out in the wash after the season, it explained maybe why when everyone was pounding the table for him, he did. I don't want to speculate on any, who knows what happened, but it makes you wonder if there was something else. I don't know, but.
Yeah, most of the time I'd say that's true, David, is that there's when we can't explain something, there's something going on. They're right. Not telling us it. And Harbaugh had a lot of fatigue with Ben Cleveland questions last year at the podium. Yes. And it was apparent, you know, time after time, and especially when you look at the video of him, sometimes the transcripts give it to you, sometimes it doesn't, but the video, oh my God. I mean, he's getting really saying, you know, raising a foot. Let me just say that Ben Cleveland knows exactly what he needs to do kind of thing. Like you don't want to hear that kind of saltiness if you can.
No, you don't.
All right. David, pleasure talking football with you. I appreciate you jumping on and doing this concern spot. Tell folks where they can talk with you, maybe and a little bit about the Reddit community if you'd like to.
Yeah, sure. So honestly, mostly where I interact with others and talk about football and specifically Ravens football is on the Reddit community. For those of you familiar with Reddit, a subreddit is r/Ravens. And anything and everything having to do with the Ravens, and in particular during the season on game days, there's a live game chat where we all have a lot of fun in there. And also sometimes misery loves company type of thing when it gets stressful. One of the games that comes to mind the most is last year, the first Bengals game of the year was,
oh my.
It was a whole roller coaster of emotions in there, but it's nice to kind of be able to experience that live with other people over the chat. So yeah, you can find me on there. Username is u/deadmanwalking99. And thanks so much for having me on, Ken. It's awesome to meet you and talk about
Dead Man Walking 99. Where'd you get that from?
Stephen King, Shawshank Redemption.
Okay.
So that's what they called the new recruits in the Shawshank jail when they brought them in. And I don't know, and also my initials DM. You know how it is with usernames. You just come up with something and
All right, David. Really, really appreciate it. Other folks out there, hit me up with a DM on Twitter if you'd like to do a film study short at any time. I'd love to hear from you. We're kind of done with the Concerns podcast at this point, but this was one of the good ones. And there'll be a couple more probably before we're done, but I think there won't be time to record anymore, unfortunately. David, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.